All right, here we go on a Thursday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Drew Nixon, Jay Binkley back with me for the next 2 days. We just continue this rotation a little bit here this particular week. You're with me today, tomorrow. Cody back on Monday. On Monday, we'll be in St. Joe for Chiefs training camp when the vets are actually there, when it's not just rookies hanging out wearing shorts and pennies, basically.
A lot of LRZ video, you know.
Of course. I think we're going to hear from LRZ, Lewis Reese Zammit, in the 11 o'clock hour, perhaps, today, once practice wraps up. Also expected to hear from, Hunter Norzad, among some others at camp for the Chiefs training
Jared
camp.
Wiley,
I think. Jared Wiley, who I know you're very high on.
Very high.
The rookie tight end.
Yeah, he's actually played football.
Okay. See, this is we have this man. I told you there's something there. This is why I feel like you view LRZ a little differently, because you don't think he's earned it. You know, he didn't go and grind at a D2 college, didn't have to do all that. And I think it bugs you. I've brought this up before.
No, I'm just saying, man. I'm from the Show Me State. You got to show me. How many times have you been tackled in a Chiefs practice?
Oh, I've been tackled plenty in rugby.
Zero. He's been wearing shorts. Yeah, in rugby he has, but in NFL tackle, how many times have you been tackled?
Look.
The answer is zero, Gold.
I don't expect him to have an offensive impact, but I think it's pretty clear. They think he's going to help him in the kickoffs.
Oh, according to those stupid Twitter accounts like Dove Kleiman. Oh, just look out for the Chiefs now. They have LRZ. Woo! Here's 10 seconds of video.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, we'll talk LRZ.
He's LRZ walking down the hill.
Well, that stuff is always crazy. Yeah, it's like it's the stereotypical training camp
stuff.
Here's
him hitting a bag.
Yeah. Oh, I know. We've all been there,
though,
right?
He just left the porta potty.
We've all been. Wow, that's weird. But, yeah, we've all been there.
Oh, I know.
Training camp. No,
I know.
Do you miss it? Do you wish you were up there or something? Is that what it is?
I always enjoy camp. I'm not going to lie. I enjoy it. I mean, tweeting, you know, guys walking down the hill. I mean, it's okay. I mean, I'm waiting for the barbecue questions. I mean, hearing those questions yesterday, because I played them last night, like they're asking the media's questions to them about, how do you like Kansas City, Kingsley, and the difference between that and Provo?
I know.
Provo's 113,000 people. They're asking Kingsley. He's in a big position battle, and they're asking him about Provo in St. Joe. And I'll be honest with you, these guys were all saying it's hot.
Not yet.
That ain't it. It's going to be, but it's not. So this is actually perfect right now.
Yeah, it could be way worse in St. Joe. In fairness, there'll be plenty of time throughout camp to talk about, like, once Wanye's there. I mean, there is no battle yet with Wanye until Wanye's actually there, have the pads on. And we'll have plenty of time, I'm sure, throughout camp to discuss the left tackle battle and everything else. But it is that time of the year, man, where suddenly multiple teams in the NFL do have rookies reporting yesterday, and then day number two today. Of course, the quarterback's up there as well. Coming up a little bit later on today, we'll check in with Nate Taylor. He's up in St. Joe. He'll join us around 12:05. We'll check in with one of our Chiefs insiders from The Athletic, get his perspective on the first couple days. Definitely going to ask him just to upset Bink about LRZ and see if he's making an impression in a positive way so far at camp. Plus, Drew's going to have some open leaderboard updates. I don't know if you were up at 3 a.m. or not, but Drew already had it up on the television in the bullpen area watching the open.
I was not up that early.
Tiger, not doing well. Not doing well.
Just a couple tough holes, yeah.
You know what I suggested last night on after hours when I was doing that? It's like, does anybody, just for fun, you get your boys, you get them all together, and you get up at 4 a.m., you have the beer, the nachos, whatever, because listen, I like doing this stuff during PGA or U.S. Open. You know, you have the fellas over there, and you're drinking beer. You're watching the U.S. Open or the PGA Championship. Do we get up at 4 a.m. to watch this? Are you getting up on Sunday morning doing this?
No way.
It'd be kind of fun, though, right?
I
drink all day if you start in the morning.
Yeah, I mean, there's no scenario. I was trying to think, like, what would it take for me on Sunday to set my alarm for 3:45 in the morning to get up and watch the Open?
Dedication.
I don't know if there's anything. If you told me Tiger had a 3-stroke lead on Sunday morning, which he's not going to, he may not even make the cut. If he did that, I still am not getting up at 3:45 in the morning.
Well, at that point, it wouldn't even be that early.
So there's no scenario where on a Sunday morning to watch the Open, am I getting up at 3:30?
Doing the morning show, Dusty could have done it. He could have been up there watching the. I'm sure he was. He was looking for it this morning because I heard him this morning when they were talking. Look, because it's on USA right now.
Yeah,
so here's the British Open on USA Network. What the hell? NBC, are you missing the boat here, man? This is ratings. Why don't they put it's Tiger Woods going away? NBC, why aren't you showing this? Why is USA? I understand they all own each other.
It's a Thursday, and
it's still
morning.
The British Open.
Chiefs preseason game in Australia. You got to stay up till 2 in the morning to watch.
Absolutely.
You're watching a preseason game.
Yes.
Okay. I'd be doing post game tomorrow.
Big Wood. Yeah. If you
Big's
told me
post game would start at 5 a.m. or whatever. Yeah.
Which is fine.
If you told me the Chiefs were playing a football game and it was 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock. In the morning, absolutely, I'm staying up for that preseason. I don't care. Yeah,
it's why I always thought camp, and I know it starts Sunday. They should do Midnight Madness.
Madness. Has he pitched you this idea yet?
I mean, for non-college basketball.
We'll bring it up in a question or something.
We'll let you give your pitch to Drew on this because you've told me before,
but I haven't told Drew.
That's right.
I haven't heard it.
So we'll get to that.
Drew's gonna love it
at some point. Maybe when we talk about some of the practices that are going on across.
I got more video of guys walking down the hill. Hang on.
That's right. That's right. So we will get to that.
What's your favorite barbecue?
You guys can interact with us on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7610. I caught up on a past interview. I think it came out 2 days ago, but last night I was looking at what was going on in the NFL world, and I came across Diana Rossini, some of her tweets, and she did a full interview with Andy Reid, and they talked about Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce, and one of the last questions of the interview stood out, and I know here locally we've all push back on any notion of Andy Reid retiring, and whether it was Mike Florio's ridiculousness, you know, doubling down for the last 3 years on Andy retiring or not. And we all know that's been ridiculous. He just signed a new contract as well. But I heard Andy's answer to Diana Rossini, also Chase Daniel was part of the interview when they were talking to Andy. And see if you agree with me on this. I thought this was is telling and sounded like a guy that's not hanging it up anytime soon when he was asked about when he could retire.
Yeah, I don't know. I remember when my parents retired, I said, how'd you know it was time to retire? I mean, you hit 65 and then you retire. I mean, what is it? And they said, you'll just know, you know, you'll know when it's time to go. And
have you been close? Have you been like, you know what, this is it?
Yeah, I really haven't thought about it. I mean, I enjoy doing what I'm doing. I know I'm on the bottom side of this thing and not on the top side of it. So it's coming. But I don't know when it is. And, this is a great place to coach and I've got good players and, you know, so I'll be 71 at the end of this contract. And that seems like really old, so we'll see where it all goes.
Like he's answered in some form like that before, but seeing the video of it and the rest of the interview as well, it just does not strike me as somebody that's calling it quits anytime. So remember, he's 66 years old. As he said, he'll be 71 at the end of the contract. I think he'll fill out the rest of this contract.
Oh, 100% he will, but he's 66. I mean, what are we doing here? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? If he was 70 or 71, I don't even know if you asked that question then. 72, 73, do you start asking the question? But at 66 years old, he's got Patrick Mahomes in his prime. He's got 3 rings already, and you can go for more in your favorite to repeat. The constant questions of these will start to get annoying to him at some point. Trust me. I mean, he'll shut them down at some point. In the Taylor Swift stuff, I mean, they're getting, you know, it's off season, camp's just starting, so you're going to get these questions. I thought he'd get hit with the three-peat question a little bit more the other night when he made his when he's out in front of the camp. How big is he considering the three-peat? But because the other players have acknowledged it, but you'll know the time is the time. Andy Reid loves this stuff. Like, he's the reason they go to St. Joe. A big reason that they're up there because he did in Philadelphia. As soon as he left, they moved right back to the stadium. I think they're away at this point as well. It's tougher for a guy like Travis. Like, that becomes more legitimate because you got to think, Gold, you're a superstar. You're traveling all over the continent to see Taylor Swift. You live in a great place, and yet you're in a dorm for a couple of weeks. It's got to be tougher in waking up early. It's got to be tougher on him than a guy like Andy Reid. This is what Andy Reid lives for. This is what he knows. This is what he does. These questions, they need to put these to rest. He's 66 years old, people.
Yeah.
And he will be all the way through next season.
Yeah, I think mostly responsible for it. It's weird to blame one particular person. But a lot of it has just been truly because of the Florio stuff that continued.
I think a big reason.
And that's what brought it out.
He's 66, Gold.
Yeah. I think with a lot of things, once you reach a certain age, people start asking those questions, yeah. Right? I mean, that's evident in football and otherwise.
He's addressed it? He just signed the new contract?
Oh, I'm with you. Look, go back to 2020 even.
People are guessing where Belichick's going to coach again. He's a hell of a lot older.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, in 2020, when Cody and I had just started doing the show, and we were in Miami for the Super Bowl, Chiefs won the Super Bowl. At that point, like a few weeks after the Super Bowl, we had the discussion, like how many more years? And at that point, I think, and this was 2020, at that point, I think we were saying 5 to 7 more. And there was somebody else on this station that said, oh, no, he's in a year or two, he's gone. Fast forward, it's 2024. And now everybody's in agreement that, oh, no, he's probably going to do it another 4 years. So even being optimistic 5 to 7 back in 2020 is not going to be enough. He's going to end up he's going to be coached until 2029 or something, or 2027, it looks like.
I notice rejuvenation with him each and every year after the title. Little bounce in the step. You know, he was getting a little tense there before they finally won one, you know, with Alex Smith there and the disappointments in the postseason and kind of the narrative that followed him in his career that he couldn't win the big one or going to the 5 NFC championships and you can't cash in with the ring. I think it was starting to bother him a little bit. But Mahomes, the minute they made that draft pick, he was rejuvenated. You know, Mahomes talks about him calling him at 4 a.m. Hey, I got this play. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of Bill Walsh and the stuff that he used to do with Joe Montana, writing a play out on a napkin in a restaurant with his wife. But he got rejuvenated. And every time they win one, he seems fresher and fresher, to be honest with you. You get a fresher – like this Andy Reid we saw in the office season, this is not the Andy Reid we saw back in 14 and 15. I mean, he's doing Hallmark movies now like you and non-disclosure agreements like you.
That's right.
And talking about that. This is not stuff that he would have even addressed in previous years, but he's doing it now. And he shows up at the ESPYs. I mean, this is not who he was back then.
It always helps when you're winning, you know?
Of course.
It always helps.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
bit.
But that's not really who he is. I saw him at the ESPYs. They showed the highlights.
Oh, yeah.
I can't see him doing it. He took one for the team, obviously. But I can't see him doing that like 5 years ago.
Look, with anything, we've always said, I mean, if we're simplifying the conversation, we would just say, hey, as long as he's healthy, he's going to keep coaching. That's the obvious thing. That's the only thing that I could see change anything. Unfortunately, that's not an issue now.
It's who he is. It's what helps him and go on.
The other obvious thing with this whole equation, Drew, you mentioned winning. Absolutely. But also, why would you walk away from having the best quarterback in football?
You get this chance once in your life.
If you're a football coach, I don't care at what level, if you have the ability to coach, whether it's Brady or a Mahomes or whoever, you know, the great, you know, Montana, that era, right? Whatever era you were coaching in, the best quarterback of that era, and you're the coach of said quarterback, and you don't walk away from that. You just don't. And that's another reason why I think he's continued. So, yeah, winning. But why are they winning? Because of Mahomes as well. And so as long as that's happening, I don't think
there's also a little thing called legacy. He's 5 wins behind Belichick for postseason wins. And everybody considers, you know, Belichick the guru, the guy. He is 5 wins away from matching Belichick in postseason wins. He sits at number 2 all time.
Yeah, so they can solidify themselves.
The legacy part of it, too, is a big one, too. He could cement himself historically through the National Football League. And it's going to be tough to beat. If he ties Belichick or passes him, that's going to take a long, long time, the way the money's thrown out and then TV networks grab these coaches and everything else, for anybody to match that if he gets it.
Well, and I think the one part that's already done without him, quarterback coach duo, greatest of all time, that to me, that's already them. I don't think that part of it to me is already cemented. I understand Brady and Belichick won more rings together, but knowing their relationship and knowing Brady then went to Tampa and got the ring, I already think the one thing is cemented is that Reed and Mahomes are the best QB coach combo if you factor in everything that we've seen in NFL history. We can talk more about this later on with Nate Taylor when he joins us from St. Joe in the noon hour. I did want to talk a little baseball. We know they're still off today, All-Star break, and then the Royals right back at it tomorrow night out at Kauffman Stadium. They open up a homestand beginning with the Chicago White Sox. And we had J.J. Piccolo on the show earlier in the week. We had Vern on yesterday, and I asked both of them the same question, and it had to do with the second half of the season, the rotation, and the innings workload. You dove a little deeper into some of these numbers as well. It was pretty apparent. You start to see the innings for Seth Lugo, for Cole Reagans, for Brady Singer. It's really the entire rotation outside of Michael Wacha, where they're going to push every limitation that they've ever had in their career innings-wise. I'm not saying that they can't have a career high in innings and still be effective, but that's the big question in the second half for me about this team. Look at Seth Lugo, 127 innings pitched right now. Last year, career high, 146. That was the entire season, all right?
26 starts.
Yeah, so he's going to, in 3-4 starts, depending on how well he pitches, he's going to surpass what he did a year ago. In baseball, three pitchers, period, are on pace to pitch 200 innings. Lugo's one of the three. Last year, five did it. Back in 2022, eight pitchers did it. And then if you back up 4 years, just the era of pitching 200 innings is something that's kind of gone away. There used to be 15 pitchers a year going 200-plus innings. That's just not how baseball operates currently. But it's not just Lugo. We focus in on him because he's been a bullpen guy for the most part of his career. But like Cole Reagans, a younger pitcher. He's had, Tommy John before. But Cole Reagans, 116 and two-thirds of an inning. He's already pitched more than he ever has in his career. So he's already at that mark. Brady Singer is another pitcher you got to keep an eye on when it comes to his innings workload. Right now, Brady Singer has pitched, what's the latest inning count for him? 104. His career high is 159. That was last year. He's probably going to pass that.
It's really became a topic, too, with Paul Skenes going for the no-hitter. Like, he hit the 99-pitch limit. How much is too many pitches for somebody? Because everybody's so worried. And not only that, but the Mariners, they've already been worrying about, as far as players that are ahead of him, or Logan Webb that's third on the innings list from San Francisco. You start worrying about how many innings. And I remember Danny Duffy when he was here and his chase for 200 innings. He always wanted to hit that 200 innings because there's something to that, man. It shows you stayed in for your team that long and your longevity and everything else. And he's maxed out at 179 because it seemed like he would get hurt there towards the end of the season. But that was his high water mark. But, yeah, I was just looking at Lugo the other day. And I was like, wait a minute, he's at 127. He had 146, but that was in 26 starts last year. He's going to blow past that. There's a great chance that he's the innings leader. Well, he was the innings leader up until like last week. But there's a good chance he's the innings leader at the end. You couldn't ask for anything more than what they're getting from Seth Lugo. Just eating those innings up. I mean, that's what they need. I know teams have gone away from it, and that whole Paul Skenes thing about throwing 99 pitches and getting pulled.
Yeah, that was ridiculous.
Nolan Ryan threw 235 pitches one game because he went 13 innings. I mean, and he was still, throwing 100. You know what I'm saying?
I think the no-hitter stuff was absurd.
But the velocity is getting out of control.
Yeah, I mean, that's why there's been arm injuries and everything. We had JJ on, Piccolo on, and he said, they're well aware of the innings. They've talked with the medical staff. They think these off days, because they have more off days in the back half, they think that can help. But that is, and I agree, and multiple people have texted in as well, and I think they're correct, 913-586-7610. And that is, Bink, that it's why the bullpen is even more important now, and that they improve the bullpen. They already made one move. Will they make a smaller move as well? We shall see before the trade deadline. But if you're going to not be getting the six and a third plus inning outings, and all of a sudden you're going to be needing four plus from your bullpen on a more consistent basis, all right, that's where the bullpen is going to have to step up if they're going to sustain what they did in the first half, which put them right in the middle of this wild card race. Chris Bubich, yeah, he helps because he's in the bullpen. He's not, because it's a rehab year still for him. He suddenly can't help you in terms of being a starter. You know what I mean? So that's next year, a lot of this gets sorted out. Bubich could be a piece for the rotation next year. Kyle Wright could be rotation next year. But for this year, the innings is going to be, it's a fair thing to monitor, both from a health, but also are they as effective in late August and in September when you are in the right in the middle of the home stretch of a wild card race at that point in time? Are you still getting the same performance out of these starting pitchers, which is why you're in the position you're in right now?
Because HDH is such a premium for the role. Is at 7, 8, 9. Almost now is becoming, you need four. You need a 6th, 7th, 8th, and a 9th of consistency and, get the payroll up. When guys throwing these innings, and as you said, I mean, look at this trend. I mean, just 2019, 15 pitchers went over 200 innings. And now we're sitting here with all this modern advancement in medicine and everything else and Tommy John's, and they're throwing out there, and we got three guys on pace, and they might not even hit it. Who knows if they're going to hit it? Seth Lugo, I think, is Logan Gilbert's with the Mariners, and he leads with 132 innings. They already shut him down after 87 pitches the other day, just kind of doing that load management. That's why I think Seth Lugo has a great chance, just six innings behind him, to blow past him. And then Logan Webb's behind him. But those three are probably the only ones going to hit 200 innings. Maybe Logan Gilbert does, but they're already doing load management with him now.
Yeah, so whenever, whether it's this weekend or any other series, if you're wondering why, in Lugo's case or whatever, why did Q not even though Lugo's cruising, why did he not get an extra inning or something? And he's at 90 pitches. That this is your answer. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're wondering, hey, he's at 90 pitches, he's cruising. Why don't they let him go out for one more inning? He'd still be under 100 or whatever. This is why. Even though I disagree with how the Pirates manager handled the no hitter with Skeens, when we're talking about season long innings for someone that's just never done it in his career at this age, that's not a younger. You know, you got to be really careful when it comes to handling these pitchers, and that'll be the number one thing, frankly, that I'm watching in the second half.
Let's be honest with you: is it modern medicine or is it money? I mean, when it comes down to it, I think it's the money. The money is getting so great with some of these pitchers. I mean, to be honest with you, the modern medicine, yeah, they should be getting better and better training and everything else with the arm. But let's face it, I think the money is the main reason.
Coming up in 10 minutes, we'll talk a little college football because it looks better and better for the Big 12 chances, I think, of flat out surviving based on some statements from the SEC commissioner this week. SEC mm-hmm. Media Day has been going on in Dallas. They didn't do it in Atlanta this year. I don't know why they moved it to Dallas. Is it just because to appease Texas?
Probably.
Is that all it is?
It's appease Texas because you already had the market with A&M, but they get two.
So we'll talk about that in 8 to 10 minutes or so. But I thought this was a fake quote. I thought someone was just messing around, but no, it turns out this was real. It came for this on CBS News Now. This was on Pro Football Talk. And it has to do with Hall of Fame wide receiver Terrell Owens, who we've heard for a decade plus, like, oh, maybe he'd open to a phone call from a team to come back and play and all this. He's 48 years old. And I guess recently in the last year or two.
He's older than he's 50 now, but he was 48 at the time.
When
Brady won him.
He was 48, though, at the time that he's upset about. And that was when Tom Brady was with the Bucs, and he wanted to come out of retirement and help Tom Brady. But according to Owens, quote, an arrogant Brady ignored his offer, something the former receiver still holds against the quarterback. Owens was 48 at the time. He hadn't played since 2010. He had retired from football in 2012. He, remember, got cut in training camp by the Seahawks. He didn't have it anymore. He wanted to go back on the field, though, and play with Brady, and I guess Brady ignored him. Quote, it was at the end of the season. I didn't need to play a full season. They just needed somebody to fill some holes with AB leaving at the receiver position. I reached out to him through Randy Moss and some other people just to come in and play third down in red zone. You know, this dude really ignored me. It just shows you the lack of respect there. But then when they get in front of you, they want to act like they respect you. What is Terrell Owens thinking? You were 48.
I mean, that's a pretty big shot, actually.
48 years old. Tom Brady thought you were probably joking.
That he probably saw it
laugh. And who's to say that Randy Moss didn't think that you were, he might have thought you were joking and didn't even tell Tom. Tom might be like, I never heard about this.
Well, it's embarrassing for a Hall of Famer that took a while to get in the Hall of Fame, and he deserves to be there. He's one of the greatest receivers of all time. But it's embarrassing when you're going after who many people consider the greatest football player of all time, and he disrespected you. Dude, understand who and what you are. You were 48 at the time, and you hadn't played NFL football for a decade. I'm sorry, but that's a long time. I'm also sorry because I'm your age as well now, and I can't even imagine being out in an NFL film or NFL field. And yes, Terrell, you're one of the best ever were. Notice I said the word war. You were. I know you put this 40-yard dash out there and all that, but it was timed by your boys out there on the field. But you should apologize to Tom Brady for this. This is ultimate disrespect. It'd be like some receiver calling Mahomes and saying, hey, man, I'm going to come back and play with you. Who's 48 who hadn't played in a decade. That's laughable almost.
I like
Terrell, but this is a joke.
The last team he played for, like actually played for, was the Bengals, wasn't it?
He got cut by Seattle. Yeah, I don't know what his actual...
Was he on the team technically, or was he just trying out, essentially?
I'm not sure. We heard for multiple years, right? Especially from 2017 to 2020, I feel like. Every November, there would always be an article about, could they kick the tires? Because the Andy Reid connection, it happened here, right? Like, not all that seriously, but there was always the rumor like, should the Chiefs, he would want to go play with Andy again. I mean, that was stuff that was talked about in 2016, yep. 2015. So in 2021, when Tom Brady's ignoring your phone call, if that's true, it's because he probably thought you were joking. He's like, I'm trying to go win a Super Bowl. I'm not having some 48-year-old join me and hope I convert third downs to 48-year-old wide receiver.
It's too bad he's already done his roast. He could have roasted this.
Yeah.
Terrell Owens complaining about
it. It was on the Bubba Dub show.
Do you know how many things change in a decade?
The Bubba Dub show. That's where he made these comments, that he attempted to contact Brady to ask for a chance to play for the Bucs, but Brady ignored him. He just got his feelings hurt, and he probably wants people to talk about him again. It's been a while.
Brady should have sent him a new phone. Who's this?
New phone, who dis?
Terrell Owens.
You ever do that, Bing? You ever do that to anybody?
New phone, who dis?
What's that?
You ever do that to anybody?
I think
lady
I have.
Lady texting you, former date, some former new phone, someone who went on a date with. You just, new phone?
I don't know, probably. Some point. Hey, this is a Wendy's, excuse me.
Oh.
I'm sorry, but this is a Wendy's.
Yeah, TL, I don't know what you're talking about, man. I don't know what you're talking about.
That's what Bertie should have done to Terrell Owens.
All right, up next, let's talk college football because I think it was really good news out of the SEC if you're a K-State or KU fan. You're like, why is that SEC good news for the Big 12? We'll explain that next. Coming up in 20 minutes or so, we'll get a open leaderboard update. Drew is keeping an eye on what's going on across the pond for us. We'll be doing those throughout the show today and tomorrow.
He dressed for it, too. He's wearing a sweatshirt in...
Well, is it still an icebox over there?
Yeah, but he dressed for the British Open.
Well, of course, it's not as bad today as it was yesterday. Yeah. Yesterday was
miserable. And he's wearing his Cincinnati Bengals sweatshirt. After yesterday's conversation, I knew that was happening.
Buzz cut Burrow, baby. I got to support my guy.
Buzz cut Burrow.
I had somebody last night text in because I was talking about my jersey number rules again. How I don't
jersey
want to see
numbers.
You. Yeah, yep. If you're fat, you can't wear Mahomes and stuff like that because you don't want that 1 in 5 stretched out.
I'm with you.
Understand who you are. Like if you're a big fat guy or lady, you need to wear a lineman's jersey, like Creed Humphrey, something like that. You have no business wearing
the 50s
Xavier
or the 60s. You're saying or 70s.
If you're 300 pounds, you have no business wearing the number one, like Xavier.
I mean, I'm with you.
Just get in where you fit in. But somebody texted, said, "What jersey do you own? How many jerseys have you bought? I mean, are you a jersey guy? I mean, we went around there and asked, you know, do you go buy these? I asked Grant, hey, you a jersey guy, do you go buy them or just get no name on the back like some people do? And I got the Joe Burrow Go Tigers with the G and the X at the end.
Oh,
is LSU Joe Burrow jersey. And I thought of you. I thought it might be you, but it wasn't.
So thinking of college football and Go Tigers and all that, SEC Media Day is going on and some interesting updates from that. I think it's great news for the Big 12 in the future if you're KU or your K-State. And if you haven't been listening to Drive this week, Carrington's done a great job focusing in on the local schools. I think today is K-State Day on his show. So if you're a K-State fan, you want to listen this afternoon to the Drive. And earlier in the week, he had KU and MU as well. But some of the comments, starting with Brett McMurphy from the Action Network, he said the Big Ten and the SEC is unlikely to add Florida State if it leaves the ACC and the ACC survives. So that obviously just on the surface is a phenomenal update. Went on to say the Big Ten and SEC don't want Florida State because adding FSU doesn't make financial sense. No desire to expand. And quote, they've been a disruptive partner, which is hilarious considering Texas and Oklahoma. Then yesterday, SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey was on a radio station down in SEC country and said, quote, Georgia was one of the best four teams in the nation and didn't get in the playoff. But you didn't see us jumping up and down and complaining and hanging national championship banners. People took that as a shot at Florida State. Remember, it was UCF that hung the banner, but Florida State was complaining last year, but they were undefeated. I get why they were complaining. I was fine why they didn't get in because of the quarterback situation, but they're just firing shots all over the place at Florida State. So this is great news for the Big 12, that if Florida State ultimately wants out of the ACC, the Big 12 is ready and waiting for you.
And I think to some extent, listen, you know damn well what would happen. If Alabama's undefeated, what do you think Sankey would have done? He would have probably acted exactly like Florida State did. I mean, if everybody's in that position, he would have protected his schools. You know, if Missouri goes undefeated, Sankey would have been out there. Hey, SEC team. I mean, he would have been out there. So I understand what Florida State was doing. Did they cry a lot in lawsuits and stuff like that? Yeah. I think the disruptive partner is coming in because of what they're trying to do with the ACC and all the lawsuits. And sometimes, you know, when you're ahead of an organization like big conference like the SEC, you really don't like seeing lawsuits from a university to a conference because you think, okay, maybe they could do this to me at some point. And that kind of scares people away.
Oh, we've talked about it with coaching. You know, when you're a coach, if you're suing the league, Brian Flores, right? He's an assistant coach now with the Vikings, but
which is shocking. He got right in,
but he's suing the league, right? Yep. Like, so you wonder the repercussion. Now you're not supposed to act that way, but that's just the reality.
That's the way it is.
Yeah.
So, and I understand to smoke the fire. Here's the thing. If you're one of these people that just said, oh man, you're crazy. Florida State and Clemson will never join the Big 12. First of all, I don't think you can say that about any school going anywhere the way things have been in college athletics at this point. And Oklahoma and Texas literally left in the middle of the night, right? Bowlesby didn't even know. He's at the Big 12 media days, didn't even know. There's the commissioner of a big-time college conference, didn't know that his two big dogs were leaving, right? UCLA and USC left. Drew, you're always on top of the stuff too. I didn't hear any smoke on that. I didn't hear that US, I mean, I always heard that USC was unhappy with the TV rights and stuff like that, but it wasn't like we're going to leave the conference. We're going to leave the Pac-12.
Nothing has been like what Florida State's been doing, I don't think.
But with all the, no, it hasn't. But all the smoke with Florida State and Clemson to the Big 12, am I putting any validity to it? 100% I am, because we've seen these other schools with absolutely zero smoke whatsoever just up and leave like UCLA and USC did. So could it be a possibility? Yeah. I think the ACC is on shaky ground right now because North Carolina is certainly looking around and attractive to a lot of schools because of what they bring. And Virginia, believe it or not, a school from the ACC that's garnering a lot of attention.
It's a big-time academic institution.
From the outside. So, yeah, these schools can be gobbled up. And we've already seen the rumblings of splitting Division I and the two with 44 teams, like splitting D1 in the two entities, even though they're still supposed to play each other. But the revenue disparity will be different between these schools. But we're getting there. We're getting there. It's just going to be a separate governing body because they don't want the NCAA. They want their own governing body. To like a commissioner, which they should do anyway, but that's where we're going.
Selfishly, though, if I'm a KU fan, if I'm a K-State fan, this is great news. I know we all would like realignment to have never have happened because it sucks for fans, but we're at the point where you have to be selfish. And the Big 12 has a commissioner now that's willing to be aggressive and not sit back. And, well, you know, we don't want to do that. No, that's why they're still around, is because Brett Yormark's been aggressive. And if that now means enticing Florida State to join your conference, then that allows you to survive again and be the final three conferences, if that's what we end up getting, you know, the final three conferences of whatever the future of college football looks like. And if it means that the SEC disbands, again, it sucks for those fans over there, but if it's not going to be them, it would be you. It's the reason why the Pac-12 is gone. It sucks for fans of the Pac-12, but the Big 12 was likely the conference that everybody thought was going to disband 5 years ago, and they're not. So this is an update that I like hearing, frankly. If I'm a KU fan, obviously I went to KU. If I'm a K-State alum, I would feel the same way. You want your conference to survive. Now, if eventually there's a better opportunity for you, you have to do what's best for you as well. But right now, this would be the best option for you. Florida State would bring in more money for the next TV deal. That's what it's all about.
100% would. And not only that, you bring in the national titles. Obviously, Florida State, you know, obviously had one with Bobby Bowden, but Jimbo Fisher had one. And then you got Dabo Swinney's had two. He's been in the national title game. So you bring that in. You already have the Florida footprint because you got UCF, but it's much different than Florida State.
It's the brand much of Florida State, yeah.
But bringing in Arizona State, Utah, Colorado, that's fine. But bringing in Clemson and Florida State brings you some cachet. You did lose two big members. Oklahoma and Texas, huge. It's almost impossible to replace those brands. But you bring in a Florida State and Clemson, and you start creeping more towards that validity because you have Houston and these schools, BYU and stuff like that, but it's not Florida State and Clemson.
Well, and as long as Deion is in at Colorado, let's say he's there for two more years, and next year
you think he's getting fired in 2 years?
No, he might leave to go to a different school. The whole thing disbands, and they bring Florida State over. If you might have some really good SEC matchups, but I think for TV concerns, if you could say Colorado is playing Florida State in a Big 12 game, it's Deion against his former school, you're bringing that appeal of the brand of Florida State, the brand of Clemson, but also the potential for that rivalry in particular, not even rivalry, but just Deion again going against his former school. I think that's something that from a TV perspective and a brand perspective is something that Florida State brings. And I wonder, not that they would, if they had first choice, they would join the SEC because of the money and the revenue. But the Big 12, I think, being able to say that they're the biggest brand of the conference is something that would be appealing to them. Yep. You're not losing any footing to a bigger school, if you will, like an Alabama or a Georgia. You are the big school, the big dog, if you will, from a brand in the conference. Even though you might not be the best team necessarily, they've got the most prestige among the big school or the Big 12 schools currently as they are right now.
I think your point about them being the brand in a conference is probably enticing. I don't know if the Deion angle,
that's like option seven or eight.
The one time that maybe Colorado plays Florida State, and who cares about that? Florida State fans and Colorado fans, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think that angle, but what you're saying about Florida State coming to a conference and being the
that's the big
top
one.
School still, And not worrying about Clemson or anybody in the SEC. Yeah, I think that's more enticing to them. We'll see. I mean,
I think that makes it enticing for Clemson, too.
Yeah, and look, I don't think that the door is completely 100% shut on Florida State going to the SEC. I think it's definitely barely cracked open right now based on comments, but I think we've all seen realignment. It'd be foolish to sit here and say, well, because he said that comment, there's no way the SEC would welcome them in. No, we know things change. We know all of a sudden, you know, there's money changes or whatever it may be, and suddenly they're like, oh, we love Florida State the whole time. They can come to the SEC. So I think it's a slimmer chance today and for that they ever join the SEC, but you'd be foolish to say it's impossible.
I could see the Big Ten starting to want it, though.
If you're the Big Ten, though, I don't...
A Florida footprint.
I don't...
They want to come out far south.
Well, I think that the Big Ten would want Florida State, maybe, if they could get them. But in regard... If the SEC... Or if the ACC disbands and Florida State goes... Say they go to the Big 12 because they like it. They're a more enticing option. And Clemson goes, too. Of the options, the Big Ten would get North Carolina. They would get Virginia. They would get the high academic standard schools because that's what the Big Ten is about, the American accredited universities. Like they would get Virginia would not go to the SEC, North Carolina would not go to the SEC, Duke would not go to the SEC, Duke would go to all those schools would go to the Big Ten because they fit the academic profile, and then regarding basketball itself too, it'd be the Big Ten would get those schools, I think, if they could. They would try really, really hard.
I think the SEC would like a North Carolina-South Carolina matchup, though.
Oh, I'm sure they would. But, for the football profile, North Carolina's not... I know Mac Brown's a legend, and he's great, but they're not really good. Like, they would end up being Mississippi State, I think, is what North Carolina would end up being in the conference. Like, if Florida State went to the SEC, they're probably Ole Miss and LSU standards. Really good history. Every now and then, they might have a really good team, but they're not going to get to the level of Alabama, Georgia, and the same thing with Clemson, I think. If they join the SEC, that's my opinion.
We'll get to an open leaderboard update here in about 5 minutes or so, but we know camp is going on for the Chiefs. They're one of just two teams that don't do the joint practices. And selfishly, as a fan, I love the joint practice. It's just a way to break up the monotony of training camp.
Because always a fight.
After a week and a half, man,
always a fight.
You're sick of it. I get why Andy Reid doesn't do it. He's going to explain in this audio in a second. And I get the idea of like, hey, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. They're winning championships. Old school mindset. I 100% get that. I'm saying as a fan, though, I would love for us to be up at St. Joe doing our shows in a week and a half. And suddenly the Bears are in town. And so the Chiefs are because the Chiefs play them in a preseason game this year anyway. So the same week they play the Bears, have Kayla Williams at practice. And it's Holmes and Williams on the field in front of us during a practice. Way more exciting, frankly, than the other stuff.
Romo Dunze going against Josh Williams.
Yeah, this was Andy's answer when he was asked about joint practices.
Well, I think the way we go about it... I think we go fast, we practice hard, we do those things amongst ourselves, and the guys challenge each other, and I don't think there's a better way to do it if your guys are willing to do that. And our guys they're up for that challenge. Plus, you're not giving things away, so you can't help but do that, and then you're not having those skirmishes that you get in some of these inter-squad deals. And no matter how much you talk, it's still, you put on a different uniform, you're the enemy. It doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter if it's joint practices or not.
I totally get every reason he brings up. I know why. It's not a surprise that they didn't do it this year. Again, the Raiders aren't doing it either. The Chiefs are old school. As long as Andy Reid's the head coach, they're gonna practice in St. Joe or away from the facilities, and they're gonna not have joint practices. And deep down, does it matter? No, they're winning championships, so the philosophy he has works. I'm just saying, again, selfishly, from an entertainment factor, from the outside, I wish they had joint practices.
Well, I remember when the Cardinals came. I think it was either Haley or Cornell that had brought the Cardinals in before they played a preseason game. They had a mixed practice. Guys do get in fights at that point. And they're at a point now, the offense is damn good, and the defense is damn good, so you're going against a good defense anyway, so you don't really need that.
I also
that.
Think they're very protective of the information.
They too, are so. Very protective of the information, but again, in preseason, people see that. I will say this. I think if the NFL does eventually go to the 18-game schedule, like I think they're going to, and cut the preseason down to two, it becomes more valuable. Because I think you can get more done in joint practices than a preseason game. because you can test situations against the other team. I think they're actually more valuable than preseason games because you can dictate the down and distance and the situation. Both coaches can agree on it, and I think you can get more out of your players. And they might do that. We might see this become a norm, and Andy might do this if they limit preseason to just two games. I mean, these guys hardly play anyway. You know that. It's getting less and less time every year. Oh, they're going to play the first half. They're going to play series, man. But that's the way it's getting. I mean, it's basically for the guys at the end of your roster, the preseason games, to try to make their way on the roster. But yeah, it is fun. I'm not going to lie. Back when the Chiefs and Vikings used to mix it up in Wisconsin, and Randy Moss was coming
when
over
I was
there.
In Houston for a brief period of time, the Texans had camp, and you had, I think it was Jimmy Garoppolo with the Niners were at camp or whatever. It just made camp way more exciting, and even for fans. But that's not, I know, the ultimate.
Someone texted me talking about the Brock Lesnar fight with the Chiefs.
Yeah,
he's throwing helmets and everything else. It was lots of fights happen. It's good for team camaraderie.
Yeah, I don't even think it's more than the fights. It's I think Andy's way just protective and worry about anything they're implementing that some other team's going to. And you preseason, you can hide it way more than a joint practice because you're actually you need that practice time. This year, the new kickoff rules, I actually think they're going to have to spend way more time at camp when we're up in St. Joe on kickoffs and special teams than they ever do. So I want to see what that looks like.
If you travel, it's a pain in the ass in your travel squad, you know, to go to a different camp and stay in hotels and get stuff like that. And then if you have someone going to St. Joe, where are they staying? What are you doing with them? You know, just a lot goes on. I mean, Andy is so organized with what he does with his practice. Anyway, you throw this into the loop, it becomes different.
All right, let's get our first Open Championship leaderboard update at Royal Troon Golf Club. Oh, I was wondering what you're going to go with.
The Open Championship from Royal Troon in Scotland features Justin Thomas atop the leaderboard at 3 under par. A lot of players at tied for two. This lot features Alex Noren from Sweden, Nikolai Øygaard from Denmark, Justin Rose at 2 under, and Americans Ross O'Hanley and Brooks Koepka. Tiger Woods.
Can he make it through without laughing?
I'm looking at you.
Don't look at me.
I'm looking at you, Lassie. You're laughing over there. Tiger Woods is 5 over through his last 5, struggling a little bit. He is now at a... I featured Australian almost for a second there.
Might.
Eldrick Woods now at 4 over par. He is on pace to be like the lot of Tommy Fleetwood and Victor Hovland, who are at 4 over par. Cam Smith also at 4 over. Again, the leaderboard featured at the Open Championship at Royal Troon in Scotland features Justin Thomas, solo leader at 3 under par.
Thank you.
Nice job, Sir Drew.
Thank you for the update. We'll have
Sir
another
Drew
one.
Nixon.
Was that a little bit better this time?
It was. Okay. I think you just like saying Royal Troon in your accent.
Royal Troon.
I think that's what it is.
Sir Drew Nixon.
Look, if I get knighted, that'd be great. I think I have to be a citizen of the of Scotland or England to have that
get knighted.
That would be outstanding. Sir Drew Nixon, that'd be great.
They've knighted Americans, haven't they?
Have they?
I think so.
Yeah.
Or maybe they haven't. I don't know.
Is that
the likelihood that I were to be knighted is very, 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 very slim.
Yeah, I don't think you have to worry about that, man.
Stay tuned for more.
I don't think. Yeah.
I thought that was a lot better than my last effort.
Ronald Reagan, honorary knighthoods.
George Bush, Dwight Eisenhower.
I'm not on those.
Bob Hope. Angelina Jolie.
Someone says you better be wearing a kilt.
Oh, that would have been next level.
Should have wore a kilt that during the update.
You could be honorary knighted.
That would have been incredible.
They knighted Angelina Jolie.
What?
Just an honorary thing.
Honorary.
Some other names. Bryson DeChambeau struggling. Will Zalatoris struggling.
Someone on the text line not happy with you.
What?
Here's a thought. Drop the crappy accent so we can understand who's shooting what.
Okay. Do you want to hear an actual...
That's the AI, Drew, not Drew.
Would you like to hear an actual Scott give you the score? Because you might not actually understand what they're saying. You might actually not understand.
Someone else says, bloody hell, Drew. Not bad.
Thank you. The kill idea is a great... That would have been awesome.
Yeah, I'm a little bit disappointed we don't have bagpipes.
Someone says you do Scottish better than your Aussie.
I agree.
Drew crushed it.
Thank you.
I thought it was much better than you let on yesterday.
Oh, that was really bad the other day.
It was much better yesterday, 2 days ago, whatever day that was.
2 days ago.
So says you can take the day off, Drew. That was awesome. Yeah, I was impressive. That you just got to not look at us so you don't laugh next time.
You were laughing, and I looked up for 1 second because I'm looking at my laptop because I knew it was going to be a funny moment where I had to really compose myself. And I look up, and you're just laughing over there. And that was. Next time, we're going to give you another one.
Okay.
Hopefully it can be as good as this one, I guess.
I believe at noon during What's Trending is the next scheduled open leaderboard update.
Perfect time to pick up a pint.
It was pretty good because your accent really didn't fluctuate. You did a little bit of Australian there, but not much.
After I was laughing, I did.
There was a mix. There was a mix there, I think. It's more.
There's no way I could do the accent for the whole show. I could not do it.
You should try. The whole show. Go for it. Anytime you comment.
They used to have a Talk Like a Pirate Day. Well, they still have it. But yeah. I remember when Festival of the Morning, they did their updates with like a pirate.
That is the Scottish version of
Yeah.
For Dusty.
Someone says, apparently, I think it's the same guy. He's having a rough day. He says, apparently this is a comedy channel, not a sports talk channel. Sir, it is July 18th. There is nothing going on. We are going to have
a good time.
And
we're talking about sports.
It is also, that's a fair point. It is also a sports update.
Unless golf isn't a sport.
But yes. But yes.
We're just having some fun. Do you ever have fun at work there?
I guess not.
At the water cooler.
It's an entertainment show. It's July 18th. There's literally nothing going on other than the Open Championship. Instead of just, being boring and listing off the leaderboard,
Bink,
having a little fun.
Your boy John Daly is not dead last anymore.
All right, John.
Somebody's at plus 12.
All right, man.
We had a John Daly signed towel in the garage sale from Dana Wright.
Did you?
Someone bid on it. Actually, my friend ended up winning it, but it was from when he signed at Hooters across the street at Augusta.
Yeah, he used to go hang out. I don't know if he still does that, but he was doing that.
I think he does. His son had an NIL deal, didn't he, with Hooters?
Yeah. They actually did really well in the father-son golf tournament they had.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'll never forget when he was doing his, he had that, it's not anymore, it's been taken over, I think, by the Bass Pro Shops and stuff, but he had this Murder Rock golf course in Springfield, and they were out there doing a TV interview, and he had jeans on, a cigarette coming out, and he was like on live TV without his shirt on, hitting the ball, and they were doing like a live story on his new golf course. It's classic.
All right, guys, coming up next, though, believe it or not, it's been, 25 years into the century almost. With that, ESPN came out with their top 100 athletes. Where did Patrick Mahomes rank out, and who wants to coach again next year? We've got some odds on that next here on Cody and Gold.